but dreams don't glue. Ed and Matt, they're the burnout kings, dropping that knowledge with sarcastic swing. All blackboard of broken dreams. Whoa, yeah. Where the lessons.
Welcome to the Blackboard of Broken Dreams, a podcast by two teachers who survived their first year. Barely.
I'm Matt Hematics. My lesson plans are held together by hopes and dry erase fumes.
I'm Ed Plan, and yes, the copier did jam because I looked at it.
Let's talk about the beautiful disaster that is modern education.
Today's episode, the first year, also known as Trial by Fire, but with less training and more crying in your car.
We're digging into everything from the moment we thought we were going to change lives to the moment we realized we couldn't change the seating chart.
Parent phone calls, behavior disasters, our first observations, and that one kid who looked us dead in the eye and said, "You're not going to last."
Spoiler alert, we did, but not with some without some scars and stories along the way.
So whether you're a seasoned vet or still having nightmares about your first day,
you're in good company.
Let's go back to where the trauma started. Our first year. Gosh, maybe even our first interview, or why do we even decided to do this?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy ride, right? At least for me. I don't know about for you, but definitely been a crazy ride.
Oh yeah, totally. A wild ride. Matt, what did you think teaching was going to be like before you even got into this?
Well, Ed, I totally thought that I was going to walk into that classroom and everybody would just be mesmerized by the math I was teaching them. I mean,
the math, yes.
I grew up, you know, loving math and loving learning, so I assumed that everybody in school was going to be just like me. Like, that's what I envisioned high school being. And let me tell you, I was wrong.
No.
definitely wrong. I remember going in there and kids being like, "Mister, why do we need this?" And I'm like, "Because we need mathematics." And they're like, "Why?" And I was like, "Math runs everything." And they're like, "Yeah, I can just look stuff up, mister. I could use a calculator. I don't need to know this."
Yeah, they're not wrong. They just look it up now.
Yeah, I mean, they were psychics, because definitely when I first started teaching, it was not as easily accessible to find the information that you can find now, but they were on the right track.
No, yeah. Well, yes, no. They were on the right track, but they shouldn't have been.
Yeah. They're always ahead of us. But for you, how was it? Like, what did you think it was going to be like?
Gosh, I had no idea. Well, I kind of did, but I didn't start right into the classroom as a teacher. I started as a paraprofessional. And so I had some idea of what it was, and my mother was a teacher. So I think I had an idea to what it could be, but, you know, my mother told me, don't be a teacher. Flat out. She said to my face, she's like, you know, we're in high school trying to figure out what you're going to be when you grow up. And she's like, don't be a teacher. And I said, okay, checkbox, no problem, Ma.
So even with this insight, you're like, let's do it. Let's just enjoy the chaos.
Clearly, I listen to my mother on a regular basis.
Yeah,
as everybody should. But, I mean, as far as what I thought it was going to be like, gosh, I had no idea. I had no idea in the very beginning. I mean, we went through college. I mean, to get some classes and whatnot, I guess. I mean, I did. I don't know how you ended up. How did you end up in the classroom?
So I graduated college with I was a math major, so I had my degree in that. And I've always had an inkling that I might want to be a teacher. And I do have a family relative who's a teacher. And I talked to him about it, and I was like, hey, I think I want to do this. I think I want to follow in your footsteps, be a teacher. And he's like, oh, all right, well, you know, you got some stuff to do. You obviously majored in math, so you don't have any degree in education or teaching. And I was like, ooh, got to go back to school. But I was like, okay, I could probably do that. And he's like, oh, don't forget, there's teacher tests. And I was like, okay. So I had that conversation with him, and then it's like the weirdest thing, because my first year was like a half year. It wasn't a full year.
So you didn't even get to start the beginning of the year?
No. Luckily, because I missed orientation and all that stuff.
Oh, all that fun stuff.
Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
But I guess he came to me like maybe a month and a half after I had that conversation with him. And I was like really like heart to heart with him, basically being like, I'm not sure what I want to do. I've always thought about it. But I was always like shy and everything else, and standing in front of a classroom seems like a crazy idea, right?
Oh, absolutely. You're on stage.
Like if you saw me in high school, I was a kid who did his work, kept his mouth shut, and you probably wouldn't have known I was existed in the room.
Were you a teacher's pet?
I wasn't a teacher's pet.
You were a teacher's pet. No, don't lie to me.
Because I never talked to the teacher either. I was very quiet, and I didn't really open up till like my junior, maybe my senior year. And then I started talking to people, but I came into a high school after going into a private school, so I didn't really know anybody coming in.
Ooh, that's tough.
And being shy, it's tough. So I always was like, there's no way you could stand in front of people and talk all day.
Yeah, I feel that. I believe you. Yeah, that was always a concern of mine, too, standing on stage, essentially, in front of all these people who you think are there and paying so much attention to you and the thing you're teaching them.
Yeah, well, we're both so captivating, right?
Absolutely, which is why we're probably doing this podcast. And by the way, just as a reminder to everybody, everything you hear today in this podcast is probably a lie. It's a fake story. We made it all up on the spot. In fact, ChatGPT probably wrote the whole thing. I mean, I don't know if I can say ChatGPT, but we'll call it AI or something, wrote the entire thing. And this is, all these stories are made up and false, and don't sue us.
Yeah, well, getting back to my story. Yeah, so I had that conversation, and about like a month and a half later, he gives me a phone call, and he's like, hey, were you seriously like thinking about getting into teaching? I was like, yeah, like I wouldn't have said it if I wasn't. And he's like, well, funny story. We have a math teacher who kind of just walked out. Would you want to try it out and see if it's something that you actually want to do? You'd be a long-term sub. And I was like, let's do it. Why not?
They quit?
Yeah, they quit. Like, I don't even know if they quit. They left.
They walked out.
Yeah. So the story goes, and this is from the kids in that class.
Okay.
They told me, they're like, so they come in first day and they're like, mister, our other teacher left. And I was like, what do you mean that he left? Well, in the middle of our class, like we all walked in. He basically got up, grabbed his jacket, walked over to the lights, didn't say a word, clicked them off, left, shut the door, and then disappeared.
He shut the lights off like he's leaving for the day.
Yeah, like
he was, forever.
Like he was leaving for the day. And then from what the kids have told me, they went to the window because they could see the parking lot, and they literally watched him basically like running to his car, jumping over the bushes, and driving away.
Not like walking casually out through like he's got an appointment to go to, but sprinting out.
Yeah, like literally running to his car.
Track and field style hurtling over bushes.
That's what I hear. And it's funny because I said to them, I said, well, what did you guys do? Because I was curious. You know, being a teacher, you want to be in the room with the kids because, I mean, you worry about safety and everything else like that. And they said, well, the tallest kid in the room basically sat at the desk and pretended to be the sub.
The tallest kid took over.
Yeah, so he said, yeah, I kind of look like I'm an adult, so I sat up here and we left the lights off and we all just hung out. And I said, you guys didn't just leave? They're like, well, seventh period, I mean, we didn't want to get in trouble, so we just pretended there was a teacher here.
Wow, that kid's probably a hero in those other students' eyes.
It probably was, but I mean, for me, it should have been a red flag right away when a teacher literally just packs up their stuff and leaves for the day.
They're like literally pulling the red flag up the flagpole as you're walking into the building, and you're like, no, that's fine, that's normal.
And I don't know, maybe it was good to come in halfway through a year like that, because you do miss all that beginning stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if it's better or worse to come in the middle of the year.
Yeah, I definitely will say going into the middle of the year is probably more of a challenge, because all those routines, whether they're good or bad, are stuck.
What routines?
Well, assuming there were some.
I don't know. Based off of what I saw from my first like couple weeks there,
oh my
it was
gosh.
An uphill battle.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you about how I ended up getting into education. It was a recession. I had been a paraprofessional. I was Mr. Dude.
Yep.
And that's what the kids called me because they were all stoned and high first thing in the morning in an English class. And that's where I was. They had no idea what my name actually was, but I was Mr. Dude to them. And I enjoyed it. It was fine. It filled the void I had in my life, which was money. I don't know why I chose that because it was not exactly a lot of money.
Well, in a recession, money's money.
But this, I needed everything I could get. I was living at home with my mother who told me not to be a teacher. And she's like, we need somebody. You need a job. And I was like, fine, I'll do it. So I did it, right? And then the end of that year, I was like, I'm moving out. So I moved out. And then I had this grand scheme to get a job in my field that I graduated from college from with a bachelor's degree. And it took me, I couldn't get it. I ended up working a retail job for minimum wage and applying to jobs in my field. And in the meantime, I had the idea. I was like, well, I know what I'll do. I'll apply to grad school for special education.
Sounds like a great plan.
Oh, and that's why I'm called Ed Plan, because it was a great plan. So I did that, and I remember, you know, finally getting a job in my field, but committing to grad school, and I was wavering between the two, and I went. I went to grad school, and I was like, yeah, this is it. I'm going to change the world. I'm going to work with students with disabilities, and I'm going to help them, and they're going to learn so much, and this is going to be spectacular. I'm like, I can see it. And, you know, everybody around me in grad school was so positive and upbeat. I lived it. I loved it. And I felt very empowered to go into teaching. And
yeah, I had a similar experience with my master's. Everybody was so positive. We all had this grand idea that we were going to change everybody, make them want to learn, and just feel like we were making a difference.
Yeah, all these fun activities, all this ambition was just, the room was full of it.
Yeah. And then you got to wonder, like,
where did it go?
Yeah. So seriously, I mean, there are glimpses of it. I still get it. But I know during that first year, gosh, going into college after my, like, that half year I did and seeing how positive people were, and they, like, a lot of my graduate classes were with undergraduates as well who are in education. So they didn't even do their student teaching or anything or step foot in a classroom yet. And I'd sit there being like, you have no idea what you're in for.
I was one of those had never student taught. So I'm here I am doing all this graduate work with people who have already been in the classroom and taught, and other education majors who did that as their bachelor's degree. I think I had some overlapping courses because I was new to it. And they had all been a part of these different student teaching programs. And meanwhile, I've never set foot in a classroom in that role, not even as a student teacher. I was a para. I mean, in like some hobunk town in the middle of nowhere. And that was totally different from where I ended up.
Yeah, see, the half year, I think, really helped me out because I didn't do student teaching until my graduate work. So doing the student teaching was like a breeze for me because it was basically me teaching and then, you know, my facilitator coming and checking me out or whatever. But it was just good to have that experience beforehand. So I'm very happy that I had that experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I can tell you, definitely going from being para to lead teacher was nerve-wracking.
Yeah. All right, so switching gears, let me ask you, first day, how did you prepare for that?
Well, gosh, I remember not sleeping, and it wasn't just the night before that I didn't sleep. I don't think I slept for nights, plural, beforehand. I had, even leading up to the first days, you know, the teacher professional development, the teacher orientation, and doing all that stuff, I remember not sleeping great beforehand. And then, you know, sleeping okay during professional development, and I don't even know what we're doing. We had like these massive teacher gatherings before the year to like get us all pumped up as a unit. And all the teachers are there, like you could tell who the veteran teachers were.
Oh yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm like, this is gonna be great, guys. And it just, I had no idea, but I did hear about a book, and I actually went out and bought the book. Because I was convinced that this is gonna solve all my problems, and it had some great suggestions in there, which I did.
Yep.
But that book was way too long to read like 2 days before going to work.
Yeah, you probably should have started a little earlier.
I probably should have.
I mean, you probably knew weeks in advance that you were going to be starting, right?
I think I got the job. Let's say so. If we started at the end of August or something, I think I probably got the official hire letter like a couple weeks beforehand. And I was like, oh gosh, I really need to go get this book.
Yeah. So did you buy the book after you got accepted?
Yeah.
And how did the interview go for you? Was it okay?
Well, I don't want to strut my stuff here, but every single job interview I went on, I was offered a position afterwards. But probably...
Hold on. You're in special education?
Yeah, I am.
Ah, there we go.
I think they were like, you're breathing and certified? Come on down.
Yeah, Trust me, working in schools as long as I've been in there, I see it every year with the rotation of special ed teachers.
Oh my gosh, it is such, you know, and to any of those special ed teachers out there listening, you can quit if you want.
Don't say that.
Doing a great job.
We may be disgruntled a little bit, but we do love our job. Well, at least I love my job. I don't know about Ed, but I do love my job.
Matt loves his job. Matt, I think, knew a long time ago. But I will tell you guys the name of the book I read because there are some really great suggestions in the book and great routines. And some of those routines that you set forward on day one really do transpire throughout the entire year.
I will second the importance of routines.
Yes. If you set it day one, and any veteran teacher will speak to that, you'll be fine. But the book was called The First Days of School, How to Be an Effective Teacher.
Sounds very good.
By Harry Wong. Sorry, I'm a fifth grader and giggling. But by Harry K. Wong. And honestly, it was a great book to skim. I did not have time to read it all. But
so they didn't have the Cliff Notes version?
No. But those routines and seating charts and all those things that they tell you to do, but day one, you need the refresher. I almost forgot everything I had learned on the first day, and I slept like garbage.
Yeah, and you probably haven't slept since you've been a teacher, well, at least during the school year.
I take naps.
Yeah, well, you have to.
I have to take a nap.
The energy drain is real.
The mental exhaustion is absolutely there.
How many decisions do we make a day?
Like three.
Three.
In thousand.
A classroom? Yeah, maybe 3,000, but it gets exhausting.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. It is exhausting. Do you remember your first day? Did you do anything special to prepare for starting in the middle of the year?
Oh, gosh, middle of the year. I went and I met with the principal and everything, and we had a conversation. It was kind of like my interview. I did re-interview when I got hired the following year at the same school. But I remember basically being like, well, are there lesson plans? And it's like, no. And at the time, it was three different preps. So I had three different classes to teach, and I said, well, I'm going to need like a week at least so I can kind of look over stuff because I haven't done high school math in, you know, 6-7 years. And if it was freshman year, it was probably like 8 or 9 years. It was a long time since I've done that stuff. And yes, like math should come back to me, and it's all stuff that you use in higher level math, but I had to prep and I had to make some lesson plans.
Did they give you anything?
Yeah, it was like, here's your books. And this is where they were about.
This is the trial by fire. I remember going into my first year teaching and going, so, like, I think it was like, you know, we'll call it, you know, T minus 1 day or 2 days before the first day. And I'm like, so what am I teaching? Because you thought, I mean, I remember interviewing and they're like, what are you good at? And I'm like, well, I'm good at math and science. Don't put me in English. And they said, okay, you'll probably be doing these things. And the first day rolled around, and I didn't do those things.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you on your first year, but lesson plans, not doing any type of education courses, I had no idea what a lesson plan was, what it had to look like. And being a long-term sub, I didn't have a mentor, really, because it was halfway through the year. So, like, first year, second year mentoring, if you do that in your districts and stuff, like, I didn't have that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But everyone was very supportive. They're like, hey, if you need anything, let me know. And then I think I saw them maybe once or twice. I got checked in on it every once in a while with, like, observations and stuff. But it was basically like, here you go. Do your best.
Oh, geez. Yeah, talk about a trial by fire. They're just like, okay, make sure the kids don't kill each other.
Yeah, that was important.
Keep them in the classroom. And if we don't hear anything from you, you're doing a great job.
Yes.
That's pretty much the role of the long-term sub. Maybe if you could teach them a couple things, we'd appreciate it.
And the advice I got from people before I did my first day, it's like, don't let them see you smile.
Oh, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. The first year, the first month or two, literally up until like the first open house, I was like flat. like with no emotion. And I wouldn't let the students see me laughing at anything they did. I also didn't let them see me crying.
You could hold back a laugh? Are you sure?
Well, when put on the spot, maybe. Not with you. I giggle like a little schoolgirl.
I have that effect. I'm sorry. Yeah, but that's the advice I got. And I said, what does that mean? So, like, have no personality, be a robot? And it's like, no, just don't let them see you smile. I didn't know what that meant for the longest time, and I still don't. And I have that in my back of my mind. Like, this is like 15 years ago, and I still think of that. And I don't know if it's good advice. For me, I think it's bad because I like to have my personality show, and kids can tell if you're authentic. And true. Me sitting up there basically being like, I don't smile ever.
Well, they're going to read through that pretty quick.
Yes, and I also have a sense of humor, and if a kid like makes me laugh, they make me laugh. I can't help that.
So how did you handle, as a beginning teacher, how did you handle that those discipline problems?
Oh, it was rough. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, first year, especially coming in where all the routines were broken because it was a couple weeks because they weren't sure if the guy was coming back, and I'm sure they had conversations. So it was one of those things where, what do you do? So I, you know, came up with a seating chart.
Oh, yeah.
And switched it 45 times for each class because you realize, well, that was a bad pairing over there, bad pairing over here. And then you had the kid. Like, one of my first behavior things was, I'm not moving.
And what do you do?
Oh, it's a power struggle. I was like, well, you have to move.
And I'm not doing it. I'm not moving.
Yeah. So it was like, do I really need to call somebody?
Do I? Did you call?
Oh, of course. Because if you're going to make that threat, you got to follow through.
Well, you know what? For our first year teachers, that is the thing. If you're going to make a threat, you better be ready to follow through.
Yeah, do it.
Otherwise, they're going to call you on it.
Yes.
And they're going to be like, ah, he's not going to do it.
Yeah, I think about it, like, especially having kids now, and, like, I think about my first year and following through on things that I said I was going to do. I have to follow through.
Yeah, you have to.
And it was definitely, like, good advice as a teacher and as a parent, because if you don't follow through, it's like, yeah, right. I'm sure you're going to do that.
You know, I still believe in the model of following through and the sacrificial lamb.
Sometimes I would 100% vouch for you on that.
So and for those of you who don't understand what the sacrificial lamb, we're not actually sacrificing them to the gods. Well, we're sacrificing them to the discipline gods, I guess.
Yes.
However, they don't believe you until that one kid actually gets in trouble. Now, there are other kids who get in trouble all the time. And sure, if you follow through with that kid, but if it's the kid who doesn't normally get in trouble and they get in trouble, whatever it is, well, now everybody believes you. Word travels so fast.
Oh yeah,
Mr. Hematix, he got so and so got in trouble by Mr. Hematix.
And if it's second period, everybody knows by the end of second period.
Yeah. Oh, it's spread, and then you're golden. But I almost need to do it every year.
Yeah.
Every year there's one sacrificial lamb by November, usually by September 15th.
Oh, you make it to November? I'm always September.
Well, I'm trying to be positive.
Listen,
here.
The honeymoon week is good. Everybody's like, oh, this guy, and they're like, just, you know.
Yep.
They're sizing you up.
Well, there's the honeymoon period, too. Gosh, for all every first year, every teacher, the first couple months. Gosh.
Yeah. They size you up, and they try to figure you out. And then when they think they got you figured out, they're like, let's push them.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. The pushing.
Yeah.
That's probably with your student there who was like, I'm not moving.
Yeah. And it was just like digging in. And then when the administrator came, it was like, I'm not moving. I was like, oh. And I like did the step back being like, this is your show now.
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, gosh.
And I'm sitting there being like, gosh, when I was 15, I would never be able to do this. And be
no.
So this is where my perception of what education was going to be like compared to what it was. I mean, I learned that in like the first like 2 weeks that, oh gosh, these kids are going to test me and I got to follow through if I go back at them.
Oh, you have. Yeah. Yeah. Once you get that figured out, though, now we've seen some teachers come and go. There's the strict disciplinarian teacher. And we've also seen the, I'm your buddy, I'm your friend, I'm the cool guy, I'm the cool girl, whoever you are. And, you know, you build that relationship with your kids real fast that everybody likes you and you can't get anything taught.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to have, like, there's a fine line. Like, you want to be friendly with them, but you also want to be their teacher, right?
Right. You're not their friend, but you can be friendly.
And it takes years to balance that out. So, like, you're not going to get that in your first year. And it's funny because I love it when you catch that kid trying to take advantage of that and try to be your friend. And you're like, I'm not here to make friends. I have already too many friends. I don't need you as a friend.
Yeah, there's no room. In fact, the list is full.
That's my go-to line.
You're going to have to get on the waiting list for friends here.
Yeah.
So, when you had your first year, it means you probably also had your first formal observation.
Yeah. And, I mean, we all go through it, right? I mean, till this day, formal observations, they send a shiver down your spine.
I can't stand them.
You never know what to expect, right?
And everything's like, anything that can go wrong will probably go wrong.
Oh, yeah. And you always get that one kid in your formal observation who's like, mister, you don't normally do this. Even if it's something that you normally do, just to like push back a little and try to get under your skin to get you riled in front of an administrator or your department supervisor or whoever's observing you, there always is that one in that class.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So what I found out is if I'm going to do something specifically for my formal observations, not like I did during my first year when they called us out. So they called us out because you'd never done it before, and you're putting on the dog and pony show, being like, look at me. I'm doing group work. Meanwhile, you're like, I hate group work.
Hey, group work wasn't a thing when I first started. It was like, yeah, you might want to, but.
Well, you know, I'm using that as an example, but you're trying new things to show off your teaching capabilities because you're, after all, a master of the art of teaching, or hopefully maybe a master of science of teaching, but you've honed your craft, or so you thought, and you're ready to show all these new things that the kids have never seen before.
Yeah.
So what I do now is I start doing them beforehand so the kids don't call me out on it. I like three times, two or three times, maybe one time. The number's going to get smaller the longer this goes. But I do it at least once beforehand so that when it happens during the observation, they know what to expect.
And then you keep track of the date you did it, and you write a formal lesson plan. So if they question it, you're like, oh, hold on. Let me pull up my lesson plan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, gosh. And I do truly feel bad for any teachers out there who have to submit formal lesson plans on a daily basis or regular basis. I feel bad for you. It shouldn't have to be that way.
Yes. Always have to prove that you're doing your job.
Yeah. I think my first formal observation went well. I mean, they had suggestions, and I and my observer, my boss, my direct supervisor, they were very, you know, positive in their feedback, and they gave good suggestions, and not too many, because if you give too many, it's too much. You can only fix, like, two things at a time.
Yeah, and I didn't really even talk about mine, but yeah, my first formal observation, I was nervous, and I don't know about you for your first year, but I came to school being a young, you know, teacher. I wore a shirt and tie, had the slacks, had the dress shoes, everything else, and my first observation, I was just sweating profusely. I saw them walk to the door with their little clipboard and everything, and I'm like,
oh, the dreaded clipboard.
This is happening right now. And obviously, like I said, not really having any formal training and education, I was like, I don't know what he's looking for.
Oh, yeah, you have no idea. And I even still today, when admin walks in, I still go, really? Today? I mean, the unannounced observation is what it is, and, you know, 99% of the time I'm doing something I'm supposed to be doing, but there's usually that, like, 1% where we're off topic talking about something unrelated. And I'm like, all right, and changing back to the topic of learning.
Yeah.
And kids are like, oh.
Yeah. And I feel like the first observation, I definitely really took to heart what was told to me and everything else like that. As I've obviously taught for many years, I start to just be like, uh-huh, yep, oh, okay, yep, oh, good suggestion. I like it. I might try to use that.
Did you use it?
No. But you want to still seem receptive and be like, oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, I could do this better.
You could. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, like we said initially, you were a warm body and you kept the kids in the classroom. That's, and maybe they learned a thing or two.
That's right.
Gosh, man, that is, yeah, taking that feedback the first year is tough. It's hard. You take it all to heart. You take it all personally.
All of that first stuff is hard.
It is.
Like the first parent phone call.
Oh, no.
And me, you know, I have like phobia of the phone. The fact that I'm like talking right now and people are listening to me, I can't stand it.
There's probably three people listening to you. One of them is going to be my mom.
Listen, my mom would listen too. So we got your wife. Two. Oh, my wife will listen. That's two. Three. That's three people.
Three people. Okay.
My mom.
Your mom and your wife.
And my wife.
I don't even think my wife's going to listen to it. She's going to be like, yeah, okay, whatever.
And maybe like one teacher friend that we go, hey, you should check us out.
You check it out. Yeah. BlackBoardOfBrokenDreams.com.
Pretend you don't know us.
No, you don't know us.
Yeah.
Who are Matt and Ed? We're famous. Someday. Maybe not. Probably not.
In our dreams.
Not even. I don't even know if I want that in my dreams. Do I?
No. I just want to be able to talk and like, you know, just have a productive conversation about where we are in life, right?
You kidding me? I love the attention. No, but we do enjoy talking about, you know, all these things because we felt like it should be heard from, obviously, two jaded teachers.
Yeah. So my first parent phone call was my first behavior issue because I talked to the administrator and they're like, you might want to call home on this too.
Do you remember what it was about?
What? The
phone call, like why you were calling. What, do you remember what the behavior was?
Well, it was for the behavior issue of not switching the seat.
Oh, you called home for that.
Well, the administrator, and you know, I'm a math person, so I like to follow rules because without rules, we don't have order, right?
It's true.
And we will get problems wrong, so I'm big on rules. So if someone tells me I should do something.
You do it.
I do it. Especially if I'm starting off at a place, hopefully getting a job later, I'm going to do what they asked me to do. So I called home. And let me tell you, the apple does not fall far from the tree.
Oh, no?
I called it, and it was the mom, and she was basically been like, what are you bothering me for?
No.
And I was like, I'm sorry, you know, hey, just wanted to talk to you about, you know, your daughter's behavior in class. She didn't want to move her seat. You know, I just want to know, is there anything I could do maybe to kind of like put her in a seat that she feels comfortable in? And she was basically like, well, at school, she's your problem.
No, your problem.
First parent phone call. This is literally the conversation I had.
What did you do?
I said, okay, well, I will do my best to find a seat that's is suitable for her where she's not going to be upset about it, but thank you for talking to me.
And mom walked all over you.
Yeah, but I, again, being a first-year teacher, I said, you know, well, I did call home. I can check that box.
Oh, yeah, the tiered intervention systems that we're supposed to follow. Did you give your warning? Did you call home? All the check boxes are hit. So nice job.
Yeah, so I did, like I said, rule follower. Oh, but I checked my box. I gave the warning. I gave a second warning. I talked about the administrator coming. And then the administrator came.
I hope they put that in your evaluation. Proficient.
Or it's like, cannot handle a classroom.
He has so many issues. And I mean, gosh, you hear it sometimes from the you know, when the administrators are saying things that they probably, oh, that Mr. Hermatics, he really can't handle a classroom.
Yeah, I know. We all, I mean, schools are schools, right?
They are. They're lovely places for learning institutions and stuff.
Yeah. But that was my experience. Do you remember your first parent?
Gosh, I held off on making that first phone call for so long.
But you love talking to people.
Yeah, but that first phone call, oh, man. You know what I find? So, I'm going to say something else. So your first phone call, if you want to make your life easier and get this out of the way, make your first phone call a positive phone call, being like, hey, I just wanted to call and let you know, by the way, that I'm Mr. Plan, and your student just did an awesome job on a test. And that will shock them. And I did that 1 year. Obviously not my first year. I didn't know any better. But I did that 1 year. I called every student.
I think that's a great advice.
I called every student's parent, either left a voicemail or talked to them directly and complimented their student and introduced myself and then said, if you have any questions, please feel free to get a hold of me. And because I do literally called everybody saying the same thing, it made it so much easier. But when I had to call home for my first time, I think my voice was trembling in the background as I introduced myself and laid out the long name of the school. And hello, I'm Mr. Plan from the high school of lots, you know, wherever I'm from. and then had it re-say myself because they were on a cell phone and didn't hear me.
Oh, that's the worst.
You're who from where? You know, and then I'm like, oh, by the way, your student, we had a little incident in the classroom, and this is what happened. And, yeah, mine did not go as poorly as yours did.
That, yeah, it's tough.
But they definitely did threaten their student. Yeah. Wait till they get home. They're going to get it. They're going to have no video games, no cell phone. Gosh, they don't even think they had their cell phones then. No iPods, whatever it was. Like, they were going to be gone. I was just like, okay, thank you for your support.
Now, the question is, do you regret calling with that big of a, they're not going to do this or that?
No,
did you feel
that? Even though the behavior only fixed itself for like 3 days.
Hold on. What was the behavior?
Oh, gosh. I don't even.
You don't remember your first behavior issue?
It was probably some good kid being a jerk to like me or not moving or similar to yours. I mean, we both were at the same place for there for a little while. So probably some of the similar behaviors. Or you know what? It was. There's so many. There's just so many.
They all just meld into one big
behavior
issue.
They all melded into a beer glass is what they did. That's literally what happened. They probably all melded into a beer glass, and I drank the problems away. Not that that's an acceptable thing to do, but it's definitely happened.
I mean, I will say, I've met some educators, and let me tell you, a lot of them drink.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
They a lot of them. Drink.
High stress job, right?
So stressful. And how did you manage your stress?
I worked a part-time job as well my first year. So like most teachers, you have to have that side hustle, right?
Yeah. I didn't have a side hustle then.
I wasn't sure if I was going to like the job. So I stayed at my retail job that I was doing because I was working full-time there.
That's smart.
Yeah. Then I was working full-time at school.
Were you tired?
And I was trying to do, you know, three preps of lesson plans. So needless to say, I did not sleep for those, you know, 5-6 months.
Yeah.
I worked every day, literally every day, to make my hours at the other job. I work Friday and Saturday and Sunday.
So you're like 7 days a week for almost, we'll call it, you know, maybe not 365 days, but 300.
Yeah. I was young. I had the energy.
That's what some of those billionaires have said, that, you know, young people should work like 80 hours a week.
I did
more.
It. Do not recommend it at all.
I think you burn yourself out.
The money was nice.
Now, let's go back to your first year teaching. We know that we had our contracted times to be at school. How much, how early did you get to school and how late did you leave?
Well, I'm not a morning person.
Neither am I. I'm with you on that.
And I worked the part-time job afterwards. So I worked there 2 days a week. So I think I did like a Tuesday, Wednesday. Nope, Tuesday, Thursday to have a little bit of break like at night. But I was there to like 4 o'clock on days I wasn't working, maybe 5 o'clock some days.
That's a long day because, I mean, school got out somewhere in the 2 o'clock range. So, gosh, you were there for another hour and a half to 2 hours?
Yeah, but when else are you doing your work?
I don't know. At home? Some teachers work at home.
I mean, I didn't go home most days because I was working another job.
Well, yeah, so that means working from, well, just getting things done. Yeah, you want to do it where you're.
Yeah, I'd get home at like 10 o'clock, and by then it was like, I'm going to try to unwind for an hour.
Well, how long did it take you to create a lesson plan for the next day? Did you do yours a week at a time, a day at a time?
It was literally a day at a time my first year.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm that guy who's trying to get like weeks ahead and all that stuff. But as you get into it and you have less preps and all that stuff, because if you've done a class, you know, it's less work.
Yeah, it's a little easier, right?
But starting off, it was like, oh, my Lord, what am I going to do with all this stuff?
Did you even know what you had to do next? Or did they give you the materials?
They gave me the books, and I looked through the books and said, all right. And
did they give you worksheets at least?
I think there was like a little workbook, so I used those worksheets. Quizzes and tests I tried to make on my own because I was not a fan of stuff that I saw. It was like a two-question quiz, and I was like, well, you're going to be done with this in 2 minutes. Yeah. And let's be real. Friday's the best day. Because it's test day.
Friday is the best day because it's test day. And to all the new teachers out there, plan that in your schedule.
Yep.
You want Fridays to be test days so you can sit back and watch them struggle on your test.
Yeah, and over the weekend, they're not going to remember what they did Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
no,
Thursday, and Friday.
Not.
So you might as well get the best use of your time and get them to get all the stuff they know on paper on that Friday.
Yeah, and if you make a really long test, you might as well start it on Thursday.
Yeah.
You get 2 days of reading that book you've been meaning to catch up on, or listening to our podcast.
Or creating lesson plans for Monday,
right,
like I did.
Right, right. You know, creating lesson plans, grading papers, and all those other things. I think what I would do is grade the homework while they're taking a test, and then if I had any kid finish early, I would grade it on the fly.
And then the downfall was you had, you know, 150 papers to grade over the weekend.
Oh, no. I remember doing that in my first year.
That's what I did. I mean, first year is the most hours I've ever worked in any job, especially like extra hours that were not part of my job.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason it's a salaried position.
Yes.
Because they know that you're going to put in so many hours in teaching.
I try to separate that now, and like every spare second at school, I'm doing something I need to do. At least now that you left Ed.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was so much easier when we were co-teaching together. Gosh.
Yeah, but we would just do what we're doing right now.
Yeah, we got nothing done. I mean, for the record, we got so much done. And in case any of our administrators who used to be our bosses are listening, we totally were very productive. I mean, you saw how well we did.
Yeah. I mean, we were effective, but we needed to decompress for that one period that we got together to co-plan.
Co-plan. You know, if you are a co-teacher out there, I'm crossing my fingers for you, and you should totally advocate for a co-planning time together. Because if you don't have that time during the school day to co-plan, I don't know how on earth you're going to be effective co-teachers. Because, you know, since I left you, I was co-teaching, and I had zero co-planning time with any of my co-teachers.
So you were just in the room. You weren't really co-teaching.
Yeah, I was a glorified paraprofessional, and my paraprofessionals do great jobs. I love them, but I didn't feel like another teacher in the room.
But you even probably include your paras in your planning.
I do. Yeah. I give them answer keys. I give them the questions to ask so that they know. But I can tell you my first year teaching when I had paraprofessionals in there, I was like, I don't even know what to do with you.
Yeah, but as you've get the experience, I'm sure now it's like you have a big list of stuff that you can have them do. And and like they are one of the most underappreciated people in our district or in our schools. And they're very valuable, and I like respect them to death. And having a pair when we co-taught and stuff was one of the best experiences. Because it was nice to see how helpful and how much work and how well they work with the kids and everything else like that.
Having that next set of eyes, next set of hands to go around and assist them. And even if your para doesn't know how to do whatever it is you're teaching, all you have to do is just give them the good questions to ask, and they should be able to guide the students. I don't need them to know it. That's my job. I just need them to be able to ask questions and keep them on task.
Yeah. No, that's good advice.
Write that down somewhere. put that on the internets. It'll be real.
Hey, should we do a book next?
Well, yeah, if we can get somebody to transcribe it for us.
That's true.
Otherwise, we're going to be typing for days.
We don't like doing that.
No, that sounds like a lot more work. And let's be serious. Who's going to buy the book? It's going to be other teachers who have no money.
That's very true.
They're not going to buy it. And maybe some college would be like, all right, you're going to need to buy this book by Ed Plan and Mathematics. And they're going to then try to get it discounted, and they're going to pirate it, and then that's going to be it. We might as well just release it for free at that point.
I'm going to ask you a very tough question.
Okay.
Do you think you were effective your first year of teaching?
Effective my first year? I would say, well, if you were to give me a scale of 1 to 10, I definitely put the 11 in for effort. As far as effective, well, they asked me to come back for another year, and they didn't fire me right away. So I'm going to say yes, I was effective.
I think that's a good answer.
Now, how effective, I don't know. I definitely had a lot of learning to do along the way.
Let's be real, still learning.
Still learning. The behavior management, I tell you, that was tough. That was hard for me. The hardest thing for me in the behavior management category was everything I learned in grad school was based around all these tiered intervention plans and not raising your voice and kindly asking students to do things. And I learned that that doesn't always work.
I mean, I agree with some of that. The tough part is the raising the voice is hard. But the thing that I had the hardest part with is not getting in the power struggle in a classroom.
That is, I remember the first time, the power struggle the first time. I think I broke my thumb on the desk from hitting it so hard.
Do you have anger issues, Ed?
I did that day. And some other people may say yes. But otherwise, I'm pretty calm, cool, and collected until I'm not. I will be like a switch, and I'm fused, and that's it. Otherwise, I'm pretty even keeled, or so I think. Yeah. At least that's what I like to tell people on interviews.
I would agree with your assessment.
Okay,
I've known you for a while.
Yeah, I mean, you know when I've been mad in the classroom.
But I will say the not yelling can be very effective.
It can be.
Because days where either you or I toned up the volume, kids you could hear a pin drop with those kids.
You could. It was, if you do it all the time, they become numb to it.
Yeah.
But if it was reserved for those special moments, that's when they finally listen. And it took me forever to learn that, right? It was a matter of, you know, me going, you know, Matt, please sit back in your seat. Matt, please go back to your seat. Matt, why are you poking Ed? Why are you doing that? Please go back to your seat. And then finally, you know, it was a raised voice. Matt, go back to your seat. And then they're like, all right, whatever. But eventually I had that one kid who just never responded even to that until I literally, it felt like I lost it on him. I raised my voice, like yelled, like, and I remember clearly, and I had this student, maybe my first or second year teaching. I think I had him my first year. Definitely my first year, and I lost it, I think, on that kid. Now, that kid was the one who had, like, repeated a grade, and he was the older kid in the classroom, and he was like, oh, yeah. I remember it was like day one and I'm going over my rules and whatever else. And he says, hey, don't get Mr. Plan mad. And I was like, uh-oh, like, where is this going? He's like, don't get him mad. And I'm just, and then eventually I sat back and I was like, thank you.
So you basically had a guy who was vouching for
He vouched for me. He had my back.
That's wild.
And in that class, I had zero problems in it, maybe with that one kid.
Yeah.
But not with anybody else. But it took that one time of visibly showing anger and disappointment for that to get to through certain kids. And I think that's because some kids, honestly, you know, they just get yelled at all the time, and that's the only thing they can respond to. And I feel bad for them.
Yeah, and I am going to echo that statement because I feel that way because – kids will be like, why don't you yell? Why don't you yell? Kids ask me, why don't you yell? And I said, because I'm not going to yell at you. Because I know me personally, I was a kid, you yelled at me. I either just shut down completely, or I was just like, I don't care what you have to say. Like, if you can't talk to me in a civilized tone, I don't care. And I feel like at home, like, I mean, I've seen kids get yelled at. I'm getting dropped off at school. So it's okay, so they're probably getting yelled at all the time. So does it really have an effect? I'm the disappointed teacher, you know? I'm the guy.
Disappointment
who's
goes a long way.
I'm like, Ed.
Oh, no.
Your behavior is very disappointing.
I'm just going to laugh. I'm probably going to be that kid who's like, oh, I'm laughing.
You're the uncomfortable laugher.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a little bit. Definitely was the uncomfortable laugher. Or, you know, honestly, when I was in school, if I ever got in trouble, which I didn't really ever get in trouble except for that one time I fell asleep in class, but still answered the question correctly. I felt usually pretty embarrassed if I was in trouble. Like, I was ashamed.
I've seen you turn red, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm that person who'll turn bright red. No problem. Like, oh.
Yeah. But I agree with you. The behavior management, I mean, even to this day, there are classes that you get where you're like, I thought I had this stuff under control. And then you look and you're like, I've never seen this behavior before. What do you do? And I'm sure for you, like, teaching special ed, have you ever had a student be like, Mr., if you check my IEP, it says I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I had so much of that. And there have been a couple times where they've been so, I will say, obnoxious about it that I've given the class something to do and pulled up their IEP in front of them.
Oh. And did you take them outside of the classroom and go, show me?
Pretty much. That's what happens. Or if I'm being a super unprofessional that day, I put them on blast in front of everybody. Like, look, it does not say that right here that you can go to the bathroom whenever you want. It says breaks. You can have frequent breaks. And that does not mean leaving the classroom.
Yeah.
Have a break in the corner.
Yeah. But the content and all that stuff, especially like seeing I did math, that was easy. Like coming up with the lesson plans, were they obnoxious to do? Sure. And like trying to come up with all the notes and everything else and all the practice problems and all the study guides and all the tests, quizzes, all that takes a lot of time. But it's not like the complicated part. It's the behavior stuff.
That's what we spent most of our time doing.
And I think about like my master's program and graduate work. I don't think I had one class about like behavior. It was all like, well, this is what an IEP is. This is special ed stuff. This is how you write a lesson plan. You want to do this, content objectives, this, have it in order. You want to time everything. That was like my education courses. There was nothing about behavior.
Yeah, I had a very little bit because that comes with special ed. But I mean, for the rest of my general ed teachers, they probably didn't get a whole lot. I mean, if you're listening, I would love to hear what you had for any sort of behavior training and how to manage that out in the real world, especially if you're, you know, somebody who didn't go into education right away. If you transitioned in like, you know, Mr. Hermatix and I did, we didn't get it. That didn't exist. They're like, all right, this is basically what you need to do and good luck. I mean, we had, you know, I did all the ABA stuff and, you know, followed all those tiered interventions and to see what would change and, you know, counted beans in pockets to keep track of things. You know, it was ridiculous. And I'm just like, no, this happens all the time. Do I really need to make a tally sheet to report back? And they're like, yes, you do. We need data.
Yeah. And then document everything.
Yeah, write it down. I mean,
I guess my biggest advice I would give if you're a first-year teacher out there, you definitely, you know, have to remember that deep down, they're all just kids.
Yeah, they're human.
And they just want someone to care about them.
Yeah.
And that was like one of the things that like I had to keep reminding myself of every day when I went in there and a kid like challenged me or stepped up and was like, I don't like you, mister. And I was like, well, why don't you like me? I just don't. And they had no reason to not like me. And it's like, they just didn't. And you're going to have kids who don't like you. And then you might not like them and that's okay.
Yeah, you probably won't like them.
But, like, you don't know where they're coming from. Like, they're human beings.
They're human beings.
And you have to remind yourself about that. And when I start losing it in my head, I have to remind myself. Maybe they're just having a bad day. I just need to remember they're human beings.
Yeah. And remember, you're paid to care between the hours of 7 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Yep. And then when you leave,
I don't care. Whatever you do on your own time, kid, is on you.
Yep. But that's the best advice. Like, remember that they're just kids trying to figure it out just like you're trying to figure it out, especially your first year. It's a whole new dynamic for everybody.
Now, during your first year, Matt, did you have any I might quit moments?
Yeah. I mean, you always have those moments. I mean, I still have those moments where I'm like,
Do you have more?
To check to see if there's other job. What can I do with a math degree?
Do you have more now or did you have more then?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the year. Depends on the classes.
It totally does.
Because when we were teaching together, it was like every day. I'd be like, what can I do right now? But, I mean, now that I'm in a different, like, role, it's not as bad. But do I still have days? Absolutely. Do I have days where I'm like, this is the best job I could ever ask for? Absolutely.
What's it like, July 10th?
Yeah, July 10th always again. It's after the 4th. You know, I might have went on vacation.
Yeah, this is good.
I can sleep to whenever. No alarm clocks.
Yeah, with sure.
Yeah, well, not anymore. But yeah.
Back then, with our own kids, children, yes. Sure.
But yeah, it's... it's tough.
Yeah. I think I ended up with more I might quit moments after probably, I'll call it like year 4 or 5. I think that's when I started getting more I might quit moments. In the beginning, I was like, I'm going to be an administrator. I'm going to go to the top.
And then you smartened up.
And then I smartened up. And I was like, it's not worth the money. I'll make more money with a part-time job than I will as an administrator. I mean, unless you're like maybe a building principal or a superintendent. I mean, gosh, it wasn't worth it.
You know how much I love calling home. Do you think I would do it, like a job as an administrator?
That's all they do is call home.
I wouldn't. And I just that alone, that tagline, call parents when kids are in trouble.
Yeah, in the job description.
I'm like, nope.
Yeah, I mean, really, you're just putting out fires all day.
Yeah.
You're going to, they don't, I don't know why they call you assistant principal or vice principal. They should be like, you know, you are a firefighter.
Yes.
That's it.
Seriously. And I give them a lot of credit, too. I mean, everybody in the school system is, they're doing their job, doing the best they can. And I respect every single position in there.
You're a good man.
I mean, I do, because I would not want to be an administrator. Because you'll never make students happy.
No, they all
hate
you.
Or teachers happy.
They like you until they're in trouble, and then they're like, oh, I don't like them anymore. I'm like, well, you liked them the other day.
Yeah. It's tough. It's a balance. And
oh, gosh.
If you can't get that balance, it's tough.
Did you have a good mentor when you were during your first year?
Like I said, the half year I didn't have a mentor, but okay. My following year when I got hired full time, I had a good mentor.
You had a good mentor teacher?
Yeah.
That's good. And did they lay out anything for you that you remember? Was there any words of wisdom that they gave that you were like, or experiences, or, you know, something that made your life easier or validated something perhaps?
I mean, I went to them with anything I really wanted to bounce ideas off of, or if I just needed to vent, and they were great at listening, great at giving me advice. They actually went on to be administrators and stuff like that. So it's kind of like someone like that, I definitely was like, that's where they belong, because they're good at being a mentor. They were good at giving advice. And as a teacher, I think that's, you have to find that one person in school that you can go to vent or just like bounce ideas off of.
Yeah.
Like a non-judgmental like zone to do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because without that, I don't know, I probably would have been having worse moments where I was like, I need a new job. But like it was like a lot of calming down that they did for me, especially the first year when you're doing it from the start and, you know, starting all the new routines, getting a whole new crop of kids, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think my mentor gave me some good routines, but I love that he every time I was like, well, I think I don't know about that. He's like, yep, that's just the way it is. I'm like, but I don't agree with that. He's like, that's too bad. This is just the way it is, and this is how it's going to go. I'm like, yeah, but you could be changed. He's like, nope.
Is it bad that the it is what it is like the common phrase you hear all around schools?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, you tried so hard because you went in changing the world.
Well, that's what we all hope to do, right?
And maybe we still can, but there you just have to embrace it is what it is and work around it.
Yeah, I mean, I will give this is my other piece of advice.
Oh, yeah, good advice, I hope.
Don't go in to say you're going to change the world.
No.
Go in to say you're going to make as much change as you possibly can. Because you will reach one or two kids that, I mean, I still have kids who will come back. I have a few that actually teach in the school that I teach in now, and they came back and they're like, mister, I became a teacher because of your class and the way you taught. And it's like, oh, I'm not going to cry. No, it's not going to happen. And it's like, you do have those moments, but the payoff isn't in your first year, your second year, your third year. It's going to be once these kids grow up, they graduate, and then they think about, like, oh, I miss the high school heyday, and I miss so-and-so. They made an impact on my life.
Yeah, I have had, you know, you're right. It does take a long time, and I have run into couple students out and about, and former students at the gas station, just saying, and they still call you by your teacher name. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're grown adults. They're probably almost 30 by this point, and they're still like, hey, Mr. Plan, guess what I'm driving? And they're showing you their car or whatever it is, or telling you about their life and where they're working and whatever else is going on, and they're just happy to tell you all about it.
Yeah. See, but that's the you made change.
I made change.
Not the world.
No.
But a small little change in the world.
I think I still have that kid's laser pointer upstairs in a drawer.
Next time you see him, if you run into him, you're like, I still got your laser pointer.
Yeah, next time I see him, I'll be like, I still have your laser pointer. It's still wrapped in that electrical tape that you thought you were going to use to disguise it, or probably holding a battery in. Who knows?
I actually had a kid with a laser pointer the other day.
Oh, I did too.
It's funny that they're still around.
Yeah, yeah. And I was... I think I confiscated it from him one day, and then we're like 30 seconds before the bell is going to ring, and he is shining it across a classroom, and I'm like, give that over here. And I start walking over there, and the bell rings, and he bolts.
Yeah.
And I was just like, ugh.
It's funny that, like, over 15 years, it's still like, that's the thing.
Yeah,
the
it's still go back to dumb.
And they're like, it's a cat toy. It's a cat toy. It's like,
I don't have a laser pointer. I have a cat toy. Yeah, okay.
It's still a laser pointer.
I've been doing this for too long, man.
Now, I will ask you, because, you know, if we're going to talk, we have to talk about a good moment. Do you have, remember one good moment from your first year? And don't say, like, the last day of school.
You read my mind. It was the, actually, yeah, I think, well, I don't even know if I made it to the last day of school. I think I had to, like, put in personal days for, like, my wedding or something. Yeah, so as a special education teacher, I pride myself and will happily boast that I can get the kid to who everybody deems with a low IQ to never be able to do something like algebra to do algebra. And when I had heard, you know, it's the end of the year and I'm having those parent meetings, those IEP meetings, and they were like, you know, you did an amazing job with my, I never thought that my kid was going to be able to solve for X or graph an equation or whatever it was. And they really turned themselves around, or they really started to like math again. And that's when I was like, oh, well, thank you. I don't hear that very often or ever, but it was those first, you know, the first time you're hearing, you're like, wow, I guess I actually did teach somebody or left an impact, a positive impact.
That's good. And those little things keep you coming back, right?
They do. They do.
So that's good.
Well, they kept me coming back the next year, at least, you know, because they didn't fire me.
Well, if you're making such a positive impact.
Well, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It'd be a great loss for them, right?
It would be. And, you know, sometimes they do things that make you just want to quit.
It happens.
Gosh, yes, it does. You got anything else for this episode? Should we wrap it up?
We should wrap it up. I mean, we've been rambling.
We made it over an hour. This is impressive.
That is impressive.
So I will thank everybody for listening. And that was our walk down memory lane, barefoot, through a minefield, during a fire drill. And probably, honestly, you know, it wasn't that bad. We came back for more.
If you're still in your first year, you know, hang in there. It gets better, or at least you can get better at pretending it is.
And if you survived your first year, congrats. You've officially earned the right to laugh at the trauma.
So we'll be back in the next episode with more stories from the trenches, possibly featuring actual tears or just more dry sarcasm.
And until then, this has been the Blackboard of Broken Dreams, where every lesson plan is written in pencil and every ounce of hope is covered in dry erase marker dust.
Don't forget to grade papers you swore you already graded. Whatever you do, never volunteer for bus duty.
Your exit ticket will be located at www.blackboardofbrokendreams.com. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you got this darn podcast from. I'm Ed Plan, and I modified this episode halfway through. Thank you for listening.